Okay, welcome. This is episode 377 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. And in today's podcast, we're going to be talking about GI bleeding. GI bleeds, they're things that pop up on step 2 CK extensively, pop up on step 3 extensively. And they also show up on many shelf exams. Pretty much every shelf exam shows up, maybe with the exception of like PEDS question. Actually, PEDS, it's just PEDS is a little more specialized. But for the most part, GI bleeds are those things you know you're going to see it on your exam. You know that if you don't learn it, you know you're going to get questions wrong. So let's talk about it. But today, this podcast is going to be focused more on management. It's something that is very important. I suspect that in the future, I'm going to make podcasts where I address GI bleeds, but start talking about pathophysiology and talking about like specific diagnoses you can make based on certain things they may give you in the question. And again, if you're taking your USMLE Step 2 CK or Step 3 exams or Complex Level 2 or 3 exams, anytime within the next 4 weeks, I'm offering an MBME test-taking strategies course. It's going to be taking place on the 21st of March from 2 to 4:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And then from the 22nd to the 25th of March, I'm going to be having a 24-hour course, which is going to be running from 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on each of those 4 days. That's basically 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern. Again, if you're interested, just shoot me an email through the website and I'll give you some more information. Again, I've had tons of people attend these courses. They've done really well on the exams. Again, pretty much every Wednesday that they release scores, I get emails from people that, wow, Divine, thank you. I passed my exam. My score went up 30 points, 40 points, 50 points. Again, I've had some pretty significant score increases. Even with the test-taking strategy scores, I've seen people, many people, where even their QBank percentages went up significantly after taking the course. So again, these courses, they're very well put together. They're very helpful for people studying for the exam. Then if you're taking your USMLE Step 2 CK or Step 3 or Complex Level 2 or 3 exams in the summer, I have a 75-hour school that's going to be taking place in the first 2 weeks of May. That one, because I really want to invest super deeply in everyone that's attending, I'm going to cap it at 40 people. I can't have more than 40 so that I can really pay attention to the needs of everyone. So if you're interested, shoot me an email. There's still some spots remaining and you can sign up for the class. Okay, so let's go into a GI bleed, right? So how does GI bleed present? Well, many times on MBME exams, a GI bleed is going to present as a person having, you know, a few symptoms. You know, they can have like hematemesis where they're coughing up bright red blood, right? Or they can have melena where their stool is like dark and tarry, kind of looks like asphalt on the roads. Although don't forget bismuth, right? Bismuth, or if you've had like activated charcoal, those can make a person's stools dark, right? Again, that's like a classic thing they can throw on an exam, right? That's not a GI bleed. If a person is taking bismuth, right? And who are the people that take bismuth? Well, the people that take bismuth are people that are taking things, anti-diarrheal agents, right? Like Pepto-Bismol, right? Or you've seen a person taking a bismuth in the context of quadruple therapy for peptic ulcer disease, right? Like H. pylori, you know. Remember, you can try like clarithromycin, amoxicillin, and PPI. But if that doesn't work, you can try quadruple therapy, which is metronidazole, bismuth, tetracycline, and a PPI, right? So those are bismuth can absolutely cause black tarry stools. Okay. And then another thing that can present, right, they can have like hematochezia, right? This is where like bright red blood is coming from the person's anus, right? They are literally pooping out bright red blood, right? So that's something you want to keep at the back of your mind for exams. Many times if a person has hematochezia, it usually means that they have a lower GI bleed. Many times if you see like melana, where they have those dark tarry stools or hematemesis, usually that means they have an upper GI bleed, right? Now, the thing is, upper GI bleeds many times, right? Like, or let me just put it this way. If you look at the whole universe of GI bleeds, right, it kind of follows the rule of thirds, right? So 2/3 of GI bleeds are upper GI bleeds. 1/3 of GI bleeds are lower GI bleeds. Now, why is this important to know? Because again, many people, it's kind of unfortunate, we live in a time where people just blindly memorize stuff, blindly memorize algorithms. No. The thing is, I'm telling you this, it's much easier to remember and understand an algorithm if you know why the algorithm was set up that way in the first place. That's the truth, right? Again, I'm telling you, understanding beats memorization any day of the week. That's one thing many people don't understand. And again, the thing is, the USMLEs, they are getting really good these days at writing questions where you have to reason, right? Like, for example, A common problem I see with med students, you see med students, oh, they know all the biostats formulas, A over A plus B, B over C plus D, blah, 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 right? Or they've done one thing or the other where, okay, they've gotten down the formulas to a science. The thing is, memorizing those formulas may help you for a few questions on your exams, but the bulk of the biostats questions they write these days require you to understand, right? The thing is, many times, to be honest with you, even certain algorithms, I don't have to memorize them. Because if a certain presentation comes a certain way, like the thing I'm supposed to do makes sense. It was kind of like organic chemistry in college. You see people, they just memorize the mechanism, memorize the mechanism, memorize the mechanism. But when I was in college, I tried, and I'm thankful to God for this, to really understand OChem. And when I understood it, if you give me a synthesis problem of, I will say any sort, for the most part, I could figure out exactly what to do. Like many of these mechanisms, I could begin to predict. This is what step one has to be. Okay, this is what step two has to be. Why? Because the understanding is there, right? And those memories are more permanent in your mind because you put in effort to learn those things in the first place. But I'm going to get off my soapbox and continue, right? So the thing is, GI bleeds. Most, it follows the rule of thirds. Two-thirds of GI bleeds are upper GI bleeds. A third of GI bleeds are lower GI bleeds. Why does knowing this epidemiology help? It helps because it will then make sense that most times, if you have a GI bleed problem on exams, you first want to assume they have an upper GI bleed and diagnose and treat it appropriately first. You rule out upper GI bleeds first before you start attending to lower GI bleeds, right? Because again, if you look at it, you're essentially playing odds. There's like a 67% chance that, oh, this GI bleed is upper. So it would make sense for that to be your first point of call. You always want to go to the high probability area first. That's one, right? So if a person presents with a GI bleed, what do you do on MBME exams? Again, some things I will say in this podcast are going to be different from what you find in resources. Again, remember, my podcasts are targeted to what? To the MBME exams. I do not target my podcast to helping you answer QBank questions correctly, because again, that's not always very useful. There are certain things that QBanks, this is something that I emphasize a lot during my review courses. In fact, I have dedicated sections on these where I go over things that, okay, this is what XYZ QBank says. This is what many resources say. This is what, there are sometimes the MBMEs don't even agree with the USPSTF, right? So the thing is, again, certain things you want to keep in mind, right? So just kind of keep that in mind. What I may say now may not be what you've seen elsewhere, but again, it's going to be accurate for your MBME exam. So, if a person comes in with a GI bleed, what is the first thing you're supposed to do? The first thing you're supposed to do is you're supposed to place two peripheral IVs. That is literally the first thing you do. You need to give those, you need to resuscitate those people, right? You need to give them peripheral IVs, right? So, place two peripheral IVs. Peripheral IVs actually have a pretty high flow rate for delivering fluid to people. It's something I kind of did the math with someone probably a couple years ago, but they do have really good flow rates, shockingly, right? So you place two peripheral IVs, and then the first thing you do is you need to give them fluid. You need to give them fluid. So step one, place two peripheral IVs. Step two, give fluids. And those fluids can be normal saline, right? Again, many med students, they kind of perseverate. Oh, should I do lactated bringers or albumin? No. Just give them normal saline. That's all you need to do on exams, right? That's what you do in step two. And then, so those first two steps apply to everybody. Step one, place two IVs. Step two, give normal saline. Now, step three is where the dichotomy comes, right? The dichotomy comes. The step three actually involves giving blood, right? But you give blood based on people's circumstances. First, if the person is hemodynamically stable, then you should only give blood if the hemoglobin in the question is less than 7. The hemoglobin is less than 7 and the patient is stable, give them blood. Now, if the patient is unstable, it doesn't matter what the initial hemoglobin is, you need to give them blood. I'll say that again. If the person is unstable, the hemoglobin that they start with literally doesn't matter. Just give them blood. But again, only give blood after you've given fluids. Don't give blood before giving fluids. If you go out of order, you will get your questions wrong on the exam. Okay, so again, step three, right? Step three, if the person is stable, right? If the person is hemodynamically stable, then look at their hemoglobin. Is it greater than 7? No blood. Is it less than 7? Give them blood. If the person is hemodynamically unstable, the hemoglobin literally does not matter. Just give them blood. That's it. That's it. Now, The fourth step you go into, right? Again, as I've said, you assume that you have an upper GI bleed. So the fourth step you're going to proceed to is you're going to go ahead and perform an EGD, right? EGD means esophagogastroduodenoscopy, right? Because many times with an EGD, you can intervene. Right? With an EGD, you can intervene. Go ahead and place that EGD. It basically helps you rule out if the person has an upper GI bleed or a lower GI bleed, right? Because again, EGD, esophago, so it looks at the esophagus. Gastro looks at the stomach. Duodenoscopy looks at the duodenum, right? Because remember, we say that upper GI bleeds, that bleeds proximal to the ligament of trites. It's like the suspensory ligament of the duodenum, right? Anything distal to that is a lower GI bleed. So the thing is, you're going to go ahead and perform upper endoscopy, again, an EGD. Right? If you see a bleed, then you're going to go ahead and intervene, right? But if you don't see a bleed, then you assume that they have a lower GI bleed, right? And if a person has a lower GI bleed, typically your next step on exams is to perform colonoscopy. Your next step typically is to perform colonoscopy, right? So this is the basic diagnostic pathway that you follow when you're dealing with GI bleeds. Now, one thing that occasionally makes GI bleed questions tough for people on exams is that there are certain additional things the NBME wants you to know, right? So say, for example, if a person has bleeding because of esophageal varices, right? Obviously, you're going to follow the same pathway, peripheral IVs, normal saline. If they're hemodynamically unstable, give them blood, right? If they're stable and their hemoglobin is over 7, don't give them blood, right? But typically, you know, you're going to do the EGD, right? Many times as you're doing that endoscopy, right, the specific therapy for people that have esophageal varices is that you're going to give them octreotide. You're going to give them IV octreotide. That really helps. You're also going to give them a PPI, an IV proton pump inhibitor. That really helps. And remember, as you're doing your endoscopy, you can perform sclerotherapy or banding. Either one is fine. You can do sclerotherapy or you can do banding. Either one is fine. And then those people also need IV ceftriaxone or an IV fluoroquinolone, like orfloxacin or norfloxacin, right? That kind of helps, actually, it actually reduces mortality, right? And it also provides some protection against spontaneous bacterial peritonitis, because that can be a complication of a variceal bleed, right? So again, for people that have variceal bleeds, they're going to get that endoscopy. At that time, they're going to get either sclerotherapy or banding, right? But in addition, you need to put them on an IV PPI, IV octreotide, right? You're going to give them IV antibiotics, which can be a fluoroquinolone or ceftriaxone, right? And again, if you've tried all these things for a variceal bleed and none of it is working, then your next step on an NBME exam is you're going to do a TIPS procedure, right? A transhepatic intrajugular, you know, portal systemic shunt. You basically shunt blood from the portal vein straight up to the hepatic vein, right? Because again, you want to reduce those portal pressures very rapidly. That's a procedure that's performed by interventional radiology. Okay, now if a person has peptic ulcer disease as the cause of their bleed, because believe it or not, the most common cause of upper GI bleeds is bleeding from peptic ulcer disease. Again, you're going to do endoscopy, right? You can do some therapy to relieve the bleed. But many times, what you're going to try to do for those people is you're going to give them, again, an IV PPI, right? You don't need to do octreotide or an antibiotic. No, just give them an IV PPI. That's the thing that will usually help them in those circumstances. Now, you also typically, you know, after they've been stabilized, want to go ahead and just test them for H. pylori, right? People that have peptic ulcer disease, just test them for H. pylori so that you can treat them. Now, one thing I forgot to say with variceal bleeds is after those people have recovered, you know, you want to send them home, go ahead and put them on a beta blocker, a non, like a beta blocker, like, you know, like propranolol, right? Or something like that. Propranolol, or you can put them on spironolactone to reduce portal pressures. That reduces their risk of them having a re-bleed, right? Again, that's high yield to know for exams, right? Again, I've talked about the diagnostic pathway. Now, one final thing I guess I would say is they can give you a special circumstance where you've resuscitated a person heavily. You've given them fluids, you've given them blood, and they are not resuscitating. They are still like crashing and burning. Let me tell you what you want to do for those people. On exams, look for the answer that says angiography with embolization. Look for the answer that says to perform angiography with embolization, right? Again, it's an interventional radiology procedure, right? They inject contrast, they see the bleed, and they can clot it off very quickly and emergently. That's actually a really good way to treat bleeds, especially like lower GI bleeds, right? When a person is bleeding from like a mesenteric vessel, that's one of the best, quickest ways to stop those bleeds. Again, this is stuff you want to make sure you know for exams. And one other thing I want to say is when you're giving people so much blood, right, you need to give them platelets at the same time. It's very important. You can't just give people blood, like 10 units of blood and no platelets. Those people are going to get a dilution of thrombocytopenia and you're going to bleed and die. You don't want to do that, right? The thing is, the body almost works in ratios. If you're giving someone a certain amount of blood, you need a certain amount of platelets to coagulate it, right? So if you're giving those people all that blood, you need to make sure that you're giving them platelets as well, right? You're giving them platelets as well. Knowing the specific conversions, you don't need to. But if a person is getting a large volume blood transfusion, those people need to be getting platelets as well, right? And again, if a person is bleeding because of warfarin toxicity, like their INR is high, then you want to use that four-factor prothrombin complex concentrates to reverse it. Many times you're going to try to reverse if your INR is over 2.5. Okay, so I think I'm going to go ahead and stop here. Again, this goal of this podcast was just management. God willing, in a future podcast, I'm going to go deeply into GI bleeds, but more from if they ask you what's the diagnosis or, you know, what's the pathophysiology on exams, right? You'll be able to answer those questions. And again, as I do at the end of every podcast, I do offer one-on-one tutoring for all the USMLE exams. Step 1, Step 2 CK, Step 3, preclinical med school exams, third year shelf exams. I have these podcasts on all the major apps, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, right? I have a YouTube channel, Divine Intervention, USMLE Podcasts and Videos, right? Where I post the videos that I make. And then remember, I have these review courses for Step 2 CK, Step 3, Complex Level 2 or 3, right? And then I also have another website, DivineInterventionLifeLessons.com, where I put Bible-based teachings. You know, they had like 10 to 15 minute podcasts on just common problems that are faced by humanity. So if you go to DivineInterventionLifeLessons.com or even look on Apple Podcasts, look for the Divine Intervention Life Lessons podcast, you'll be able to find those podcasts. I upload about 2 a week. So thank you for listening to me. Have a wonderful rest of your day. God bless you. Thank you.